Welcome to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast for corporate refugees who want to do more of what they love and get paid what they're worth. I'm David Schreiner Kahn, your guide and community builder. Smashing the Plateau is more than just a podcast. We're a platform offering resources, accountability, and camaraderie to high-performing professionals who are making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership. If you'd like to learn more about how you can do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth, go to smashingtheplateau.com or email us at info@smashingtheplateau.com.
I was always driven to be more, and that's what really drove me to just do my own thing.
Today on Smashing the Plateau, we're diving into the journey of entrepreneurship, what it really takes to transition from employee to entrepreneur, adapt in times of change, and build lasting client relationships. In this episode with our guest, Matt Griffith, you'll hear an unfiltered conversation about how to set meaningful business goals, overcome the loneliness and challenges of going solo, and leverage community and connection for growth. Matt shares hard-earned lessons from navigating economic ups and downs, evolving business models, and the power of treating clients with genuine care. Whether you're just starting out or seeking new ways to thrive, this episode is packed with practical insights and inspiration to help you move your business forward. Now let's welcome Matt Griffith. Matt is a lifelong entrepreneur, software developer since age 7, and founder of over 30 startups. A world traveler to over 70 countries, he hosted and produced Places to Go for Amazon Prime. He holds a commercial pilot's license, a real estate broker's license, and is a musician with over 30 published songs. A GIA-certified gemologist, black belt in karate and aikido, scuba diver, and photographer, Matt is a U.S. expat, splitting time between Colombia and Switzerland. He's also a proud father to a pilot and firefighter. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Matt, you've been an entrepreneur for the bulk of your career. Have you ever been an employee?
Yes, early on in my life. I at the age of 16, 17, 18, 19, I guess I started my software company in 1994. So I was 24 years old then. And so I worked for people before that and worked in a jewelry business, hence the GIA gemologist.
Was there anything about that experience as an employee that led you to want to be an entrepreneur and to pursue that basically for the rest of your career?
Well, so I was an entrepreneur as a kid also. I was always had, you know, lemonade stands, things like that. And then when I was 14, so we're going to go back way back in time. If you remember the floppy disks, the 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, I found a supplier, Nashua, that would private label the discs, and I was selling them. So this was, we're talking like 1984, 85, 86. I was selling them to local businesses. This predates the internet. Or predates the internet as we know it. So the only way to do anything at that time was to just go door to door. So I would go to local businesses. They thought it was cool that a 14, 15 year old kid was doing this. So they would buy them from me. And then, you know, I made good money, but good money for a kid. So when it was time to actually go make money so you could live, I had to work for somebody. I didn't make enough money. And in that short time, I worked for a jewelry chain, started off as an employee and was eventually a manager and then eventually a district trainer for other managers. So I was pretty young at that time. I'm 23 years old and had rose up that high. I was one of their highest paid managers and out of 300 and some stores.
Whoa. Yeah, that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, but that's what drove me. I was always driven to be more, and that's what really drove me to just do my own thing.
Yeah, so based on the experiences that you have had as an employee and people that you know who've been successful as employees, what do you think the differences are in the keys to success, being an employee versus being an entrepreneur?
Well, I feel like a lot of people... when they work for a company, I think there's two camps. There's the camp that I'm just an employee and it's not my business and they don't love it and treat it that way. And then there's the ones that do. They want to see the business they work for thrive. And that's how I was. And that's what caused me to keep moving up and also eventually wanted me to have my own thing. So I think if you're not passionate about even where you work, I think it's hard to be passionate about moving on, doing your own thing, because, you know, I don't know, you call it karma, whatever. But the idea is if you don't treat other businesses that way, then when you start your own and you have employees, maybe they're not going to, you know, your employees aren't going to treat you that same way. So,
yeah. So what do you think are the keys to success as an entrepreneur? You've kind of alluded to some of them.
Setting goals and setting goals to where you want to be 1 year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and trying to work backwards from that.
Yeah. So what were some of your early goals?
Well, when I started my business, I was a young, dumb kid. You know, 24 years old, I'm like, I want a Ferrari. So, you know, I think as you age and of course mature, your goals are different. And basically, it was just to make enough money to be able to retire whenever I wanted to not be doing the job just because I had to, you know, basically because I wanted to. And so, so I was always looking to be able to make my retirement money at the youngest possible age.
Yeah. And how did that work out?
It's worked out pretty good. I mean, there's been ups and downs like with any business. 2008 housing crisis, that was blockbuster for me. I did awesome in that time. For whatever reason, my business flourished when a lot of others weren't. However, a lot of businesses flourished during COVID. Mine didn't. So it's a roller coaster ride when you have your own business.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the keys to success when there are huge transitions going on in the world?
Figuring out how you can fit into those and how you can evolve with that. And I will tell you, COVID was real easy for me on the 2008. The COVID was a lot harder because I had a lot of government clients, and a lot of them just weren't showing up for work. So therefore they weren't paying their bills. That was my biggest problem. So that's why it hurt me more. So yeah, that was a harder evolution, but I did evolve and I've changed things along the way. So that's just, you have to be quick to figure out how you can mitigate that and migrate to another income stream.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do in 2008 that led you to be so successful when others had businesses that were just tanking overnight?
At the time I had around 8 employees, and I ballooned that year I doubled the staff to maybe 16, 17 employees. We were a custom software house. We made whatever the client asked for. And during that time, we just had a lot of clients asking us to make custom software for them at that moment. They were trying to use software, I think, in lieu of employees to, you know, they saw software. They could spend $50,000 or $100,000 on a piece of custom software that might allow them to not have to have quite as many employees. And so, you know, that sounds like the cold, hard truth of it, but it's, you know, that is the truth of that.
Yeah. Are there any lessons you've learned in these pivot times that you think might be really applicable to somebody making a transition from being a longtime employee to being an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, they always say that, you know, copying is basically the best form of flattery. If you're already, what you're doing for your self-employed business is maybe something similar to what your employer did, look at the best parts of what they did, mimic those, and kind of do what you would change. You know, if you see something that's working by, you know, whether even a competitor, it's working for them for a reason. And I'll be honest with you, there's many times where I've duplicated something else that I've seen someone else do just for the simple fact that the wheel is already perfected. It's round and it's got spokes, and, you know, there's no use of trying to start something new and create a square wheel. So if you can see what is working for somebody else, figure out how you can modify it to make it a little better. And then of course the thing I've always been like with clients, I treat clients how I want to be treated. And, you know, not every company, a lot of times companies grow to a really large size and their clients become just numbers. I feel like if you can add a concierge type service to your clients where you know their name, those are the things that actually made my business grow, was the fact that I really just kind of became friends with every client. And I think they saw me that way. And that's probably the biggest piece of advice, because if you're personable, people want to do business with you. Yeah, loyalty's dead for the most part, but if you do that, you kind of retain loyalty.
Yeah, people do business with people that they know, like, and trust, and who they believe care about them.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, and I think that that last part of it, that they believe care about them, is really important.
Yes.
Yeah. What trends do you see evolving between consultants and clients?
Well, that's probably been, I made the comment about loyalty with a lot of companies is dead. I've had clients that I've had for 25, 30 years. And a lot of the people in those companies are now retiring that I've dealt with. And there's new people coming on. And I have to rebuild that loyalty. And I'll be honest with you, that part is harder because you're trying to communicate with a new person who doesn't have 25 years of history with you. And I've been successful so far at doing it for most of them, but I've lost a few clients because of that, because they've grown and, you know, they don't realize you're the person who does this one thing for them. And then they've asked, you know, some other person B to, hey, can you find somebody to do this for us? And you kind of lose out on that. So that's probably been the hardest part of that. And it's just trying to find out who that new person is that's taken over that role.
Yeah. Are there things that you have found that work really well in trying to build new relationships?
It's just, I like to send out gifts to clients from time to time. And these little back scratchers had a little hole there. I attached a little note to that and said, thank you for all of the years of scratching my back as your, as being your consultant. Let me scratch yours. And I sent these for Christmas one year. I do things like that from time to time, and people, it's cheesy, but people actually like stuff like that. And I've gone into businesses that I've done and I'll find these on their desk. And it's like, it makes me happy to see stuff like that. But if you let somebody know that you care and you can put something that they'll use, because I've also done really nice pens one year. That was a little expensive because they were Waterman pens. Those were like, I don't know, $40, $50 a piece. But you see people use them. They're not going to throw away that versus, say, like a Bic. So I've done things like that over the years. And that keeps you in their brain if it's something that'll be on their desktop. So, you know, business cards that go in drawers, Bic pens get thrown away. You know, it's just, it's always trying to find that little niche item that keeps you in the forefront.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to go back to what you were talking about modeling your business based on what you see other people doing successfully. And you mentioned if you are leaving a corporate job, look at what your employer has been doing successfully. One of the challenges that I see professionals facing when they either leave voluntarily or involuntarily after a long time string of jobs, particularly if they're high achievers, they'll go from a place where they have a full calendar, overflowing inbox, a team of people to take care of things that they're not responsible for, and this kind of built-in social network that's part of the employment. And then they go out on their own, and initially they have an empty calendar, empty inbox, no social structure. They're spending all this time alone. You know, presumably they're working from home, at least initially, and nowadays probably permanently. And they may be really good at what they actually do in their discipline and the kind of work that they produce for clients. But in this social isolation, they have to get up every day and do something that they've never done before, which is market and sell themselves. And even if they were in a marketing or a sales role for a company, emotionally it's very different selling your employer versus selling yourself. So when it comes to modeling what you're, like the problem that you're solving and what you're delivering, they're usually quite good at that. But when it comes to the aspects of running a business and actually closing deals, where I see that they're most challenged, and I wonder what your thoughts are about how to get over that hump.
Well, for me, I hated the concept of accounting. So that was the one thing that I ended up outsourcing as soon as I could. And I just found like a bookkeeper. You know, they don't have to be, I don't feel like they have to be a CPA in the beginning. Just somebody that you can, where you keep it cost. Well, let me, before I go this down this path, you've heard over the years that most businesses fail. And my take on that is that it's because they spend too much when they're early on. The goal is keeping your business lean. And so that's why I say a bookkeeper versus a CPA. You can go find somebody that's, you know, just where you can get them for an hour a week or whatever. So that I recommend, because that your books are important, especially when it's time for IRS. Marketing, if you've got a local business, you know, there's things like Rotary Club, what, Toastmasters, and then there's also like, what are they, is it BMI or something? Yeah, BNI. And those are things that are fantastic to get, you know, just to go out. You got to eat breakfast anyway, or lunch, whatever time they're meeting, you know, join those. Those aren't that expensive. And I was a member of Rotary Club for years, the first probably 10 years of my business. And you make a lot of connections in places like that. I don't think I ever did anything for somebody in Rotary Club, but they brought me people because they liked me. I was always, you know, very social with everybody. And they would be like, hey, I know somebody that needs your services. So those are a great way to grow something when your calendar is empty. And of course, nowadays, you know, LinkedIn didn't exist when I started my company. And you've seen my LinkedIn profile. I'm not a good LinkedIn. I touch mine maybe 10 minutes a year or something. But you know, LinkedIn would probably be good for somebody that's just doing this to kind of grow a, what you and I would have called a Rolodex years ago.
Yeah. So you're touching on something else, which is building your community. And one of the things, particularly if you're a corporate refugee, the community that has supported your success up until the point when you become an entrepreneur may be different than the community you need to be successful as an entrepreneur.
True. I feel like things have changed since I started my business versus now over the years. You know, just social media didn't exist in the 90s. Community was different in the 90s than it is now. You know, you have community platforms like Circle, Mighty Networks, and of course, Facebook, things like that. So in order to sell anything, I feel like you have to have an audience. You know, if you were a business selling bicycle parts back in the 80s, your audience was the local people who would walk past your store and maybe a mail order catalog if you did mail order. Over the years, we've seen that transition to different things. You know, it became e-commerce, and to some degree, Amazon's probably killed that e-commerce concept for most businesses. But, you know, so now you have YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and then of course the idea of, you know, growing your own platform, an email newsletter list. You know, email lists are always considered golden, but those, I guess, would be your community. And those are essentially how you could reach out and make your connections for sales.
Yeah. And in your business today, how are you tapping into community, given the way community is now, maybe the different kinds of frameworks that are available for community? How are you tapping into community to support your success?
So I have started a YouTube channel with the idea of trying to grow that. And technically, I've got a couple of those. You touched on the places to go that I hosted. We have a decent following on that on YouTube, and because that ran also on YouTube after the shows aired on Amazon. So we are revitalizing that. So yeah, so the YouTube, I'm kind of vested in YouTube for this year and to see what I can do with it. So December, we can have another conversation and see if I was successful.
So this is building an audience of community.
Correct.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, how have you tapped into a community of peers?
For peers, I tend to work with a lot of people around the world in the software space. So, and I get people to contact me to talk about like a particular project. So that tends to be probably more for me that way. Not as much on LinkedIn or anything like that. It's, or not even a local. Plus with me being, like right now I'm in Bogota, Colombia. This is not like necessarily a high tech country. So it's harder to meet people like that here. So yeah. So, I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but yeah, that's probably a little bit harder for me.
Right.
And of course I am a member of an online community, just on, it's like entrepreneurs, and that's been helpful because I get to see, I'm more of a voyeur in that. I read the posts and I don't post a lot, but I get a lot of information out of that. So that's helpful.
Right. Is there any one thing that you think somebody coming out of corporate can do right now that could be a game changer?
I think it's just making those connections. And like I said, you know, treat everybody like you want to be treated. If you take your business model and kind of make it a concierge model, that model just does not exist that much in businesses these days. And, you know, imagine if you, if your cell phone carrier, they, you know, if they, they were acted more like a concierge, you know, you'd probably really like them. Nobody likes their cell phone carrier or their cable company, you know, because you're just a number to all those places. So I really think that that's the game changer. That's been what I've done my whole life on business, and it has worked well for me. And I've had so many clients. I actually had a client, about 5 or 6 years ago, they told me that they sent a guy out of their office that was trying to sell them the service that I sell them. And they said they sent him out with a shoe print on his backside. And because they told me that they were like, you're our guy. And I appreciate that. So, yeah, I think that when you treat people that way, they love you as much as you love them.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen people who are coming out of corporate and start a small consulting or coaching business talk about is actually the antithesis of the concierge model, that they often fear that they're going to give up too much of their time if they offer too much to a client. And what you're suggesting is actually the opposite of that, that the more you offer, right, the better the relationship, the better it is for your business, the better it is for the client.
Yes. And I've really never had anybody to abuse that model. So I'm sure it could happen, but I feel like everybody's always been respectful of that. And to kind of give you an idea, I feel like I could pick up the phone and call any client and say, hey, I'm going to be in your city, you know, in next week. Can you recommend a hotel for me? And I bet 90% of them would invite me to stay at their house. That's the kind of relationship I have with them. And that's what makes it golden. And I don't want to go stay at their house. It's just that, you know, that's, if you can create that kind of bond with a client, if they become your friend, then they don't want to break up with you with somebody else. So it's future-proofing your business.
Yeah. Well said. Matt, is there anything else before we close out that we haven't talked about that you want to mention?
Not that I can think of.
All right. What would be the best way for somebody to learn more about you? You have tons of resources available online. Where's the best place to go to access those? And somebody wants to get in touch with you, et cetera.
Well, so I have two websites. I have merlix.com, which is my software company, and that's Merlix. Then I also have the americano.com, which is more expat stuff. But a lot of what I do is I make software as a service type businesses for other people. So there's more of that on there. And there are lots of resources if you want to go out of the country. We have tons of indexes on the Americano. And of course, the Americano on YouTube as well.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And Matt, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Smashing the Plateau. I know you and I have talked about doing this for a while, so I'm glad we finally made it happen. My guest today has been CEO of Merlix, Matt Griffith. Thank you, Matt, for joining us.
Thank you, David. And that was a pleasure. I thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Smashing the Plateau. Our mission is empowering people like you to do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth. Help us spread the message that you can connect passion with profit. Please share this episode with a friend. Share it on LinkedIn, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. I wish you much success in smashing your plateau. See you on our next episode.